Kristen Rillman is the new chief of the UW-Madison Police Department. She has a fascinating background. She came to UW-Madison as a scholarship volleyball player. Then she was with the Madison Police Department as an officer, rose to the rank of captain. Now, in January, she was named chief of the UW-Madison Police Department. Chief, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the beginning. When did you decide you wanted to be a police officer and why?
Well, you know, this is one of those questions that my first response is that the profession sort of chose me. And then I ultimately obviously made the choice to stay in it. So I did not grow up planning or even thinking about a career in policing. When I came to the UW, I came actually as a journalism major. I was what I intended to do. And
yes.
Ultimately switched over to an English degree when I found it too difficult to get into the classes that I needed. The journalism classes were pretty booked and filled up quickly. And in those days, we started in the stock pavilion for registration and were unleashed onto the campus and had to pretty much stampede around to get the courses that we needed. And I
signature.
Guess I was not fast enough, so I didn't get into some of the early classes that I wanted. So at any rate, the career in policing is something that I sort of stumbled into after I graduated with my degree in English and women's studies. I wasn't exactly sure what that meant and what that would look like in terms of a job. So I took a couple of years just to work and live back in my home state in Illinois until I figured out what was next. And for me, what I thought would be next would be law school. And so while I was looking around at options to go back to school and start that next educational chapter in law, a friend of mine that I had played some rec volleyball with was here in Madison and was actually an officer with the Madison Police Department. And she's the one who suggested that I look into a job with the Madison Police Department because they had a rather, at the time, robust tuition reimbursement program. So, of course, I'm thinking, well, if I get the job, then they could maybe pay for law school and I'll get to do something fun. My idea of policing was as many people get their idea from Hollywood depictions and TV, so I thought it looked kind of fun and exciting. And I was 23 at the time, and I thought that's a great way to get back to Madison and do this work as a means to another end. But once I started with the police department and really kind of got a much better sense, obviously, of what the job entailed and the things that I would be doing and would have the opportunity to do, ultimately it appealed to all sorts of dimensions and challenges that I was seeking at the time, and so I stayed.
Major ways that being a police officer has changed over the 25, 26 years. Major ways?
Well, probably the biggest I would think is technology. I think that's true for a lot of professions. I can think of when I started, we had pen and paper for writing down where that next call was, so the dispatcher would call you out and give you the address, and you'd be pulling over or hastily trying to jot down the address for that call. So, and all our reports were handwritten at the time. Those are just a couple of basic examples of how much technology really has entered this profession and changed it in a lot of ways. The officers now are riding around in squad cars with laptops and even speed detection with lasers now instead of radar. A lot of technology, I think, has really been one of the biggest changes that I've seen in terms of the tools. I think the job, from a relational standpoint, has gotten, in some ways, it's gotten a little bit more challenging. I think there's a lot more expected of officers out in the field today to be knowledgeable about, and in some ways, expected to be near experts in a lot of different areas that I don't think we was expected necessarily of us when I first started out. And so I think those are some of the key ways in which I think the the profession has changed dramatically.
The challenges of directing a police force on a campus with more than 43,000 students. Now that's got to be much different from being a Madison captain. So talk about the unique challenges of a campus.
Well, I think for me, as I've worked in the city and adjacent to the campus for all the years that I've been in the profession, I've certainly seen a lot of overlap in terms of some of the training and the issues that are, I think, universal to policing. I think what's unique about the campus community is really, again, when I think about it in terms of it's a microcosm in some ways of the larger community. And one of the things that's very appealing to me about it is that I think there's greater opportunity to affect some potential change and growth. I mean, we're coming into contact with young adults. I mean, that's the primary focus. That's what the campus is here to serve, the educational and research efforts of, you know, of our future, the citizens of the future. So I think from a public safety standpoint, certainly there are some unique challenges to campus environment that you don't see at the city. In terms of security measures, some of the cyber technology research and the materials around intellectual property, and you know, some of those things aren't you know, things you're going to see in municipal or city policing to the same degree. But when it comes to the actual work and the engagement within the community, I think the opportunity to make a difference and have an impact on helping to shape young individuals, helping them to learn, to further obviously the mission of the university and support students in their learning and in their growth. I think that's an incredible opportunity that I'm very excited about, and one of the things that had, you know, appealed to me when the opening you know, was an option.
Do you think students generally know how much of themselves they're putting out there when they actively use social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter? Sometimes I think it's a surprise to students, wait a minute, even police officers trying to solve crimes get in there. So the impact of social media on students at this formidable age?
Yes, I think most of us underestimate the reach of social media and the potential that all things internet related, you know, has around leaving a footprint and leaving a track record. And so I don't think that's necessarily unique to students. I do think in some ways that age group, you know, when we're talking about those 20 to 25, you know, age group of students, can in some ways, I think, be a little short-sighted about a lot of things. You know, they're thinking about the present, they're thinking about what's right in front of them, and in many ways, you know, good for them. It's the time in life where I think you can afford to do that a little bit more in terms of the repercussions and the consequences for some of those impulsive moves. And certainly that's one of the things that I think we try to do in our role in public safety, but in partnering with the community, faculty and staff and administrators, is to be that safety net to some extent for young adults that are still learning so many things. But social media, I think, and when you talk about the fact that, you know, we are able to, you know, there is access and there's visibility and there are track records that all of us who use social media are leaving. In some ways, that naivete is something that in many ways is just a different version. It's a more modern version of a phenomena that we see a lot in this profession, which is you'd be amazed at, you know, and I'm not trying to make a connection with students and the criminal mind, but there are certainly ways in which we are led to those who have committed crimes, whether it's on campus or in the larger community, by things that you would think most people would have foreseen and understood. You know, in some ways, if it wasn't for some of those missteps and that short-sightedness, there probably would be a lot more unsolved crimes out there in general.
9/11 changed the nation, and it changed all of us. How did it change your philosophy about being a law officer?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that. I want to say it was maybe 2 years ago now, I made my first trip to New York City, and it was the first time I'd been to New York City, but it was also a time then that I was able to see the 9/11 memorial, and not just the fountains outside, but actually go into the museum. And I don't know if you've been through that. It's incredibly powerful experience, and one that I recommend for every American really to take the time to go see that. It walks you through, from start to finish, and it's amazing. It's amazingly powerful. But what that reminded me, and this was just a couple of years ago, of course, I remember, as we all do, the day. 9/11 and what I was doing at the time that I understood what was happening there. And I think, and I was at work, first thing I did was call home to check on my family, and you know, that motivation in those kinds of times of crisis to just connect with the people that you care about, even though they weren't in any harm's way. And I think professionally what that did, because that would have been about 10 years into my career, a couple of things. One, of course, my heart went out to all of the victims, with a certain resonance, of course, for those first responders who I know from having made the same choice many times and by staying in this profession I continue to make on any given day, that when the crisis hits, we'll run to it. That's what we've signed up to do. And so to see that on such a scale, the devastation, the loss, but also the courage, really was, I think, sort of transformational in a way. Really brought home to me the importance of what I was choosing to do and what all of us as first responders choose to do, which is to run into danger to try to help as best we can. And sometimes that means we pay the ultimate sacrifice. I think professionally too, the mentality of policing certainly shifted following 9/11, and I think we've heard some of that conversation of late as a criticism in a shift toward greater militarization, and of course all of the backlash from what could be construed as or thought of over time as an overreaction. We all know that things nationally changed when it came to security measures at every level, were bolstered, funded, tightened, and we were certainly, as a profession, a part of that.
Well, what are some of the new rules in the post 9/11 era for a potential terrorist act on this campus? I've heard, shelter in place, mm-hmm. and then I've heard fight back. So, what's the 1, 2, 3 now? If there is a terrorist act, which we don't want to happen, but if there was one on this campus?
Well, that's one of the things that we, again, when you ask what has shifted, certainly the preparedness and the training, something I didn't mention at the outset, is absolutely one of the things that campuses across the country, this campus included, have done. There are plans and exercises, both in terms of those kinds of attacks, any sort of a terrorist attack, which would have a particular response that would require and does require, and we plan and train for, broad coordination at a number of different levels for communication, for getting the word out. But there's also this element of the active shooter, which has a slightly different response. But you mentioned the shelter in place. You know, these are things certainly, I think, regardless of the threat, we and the training and the education that we provide on the campus, the response is, you know, to stay where you are until more information comes in and we as responders can coordinate some way to either extract people from the situation or, I guess in terms of the terms we'll use, neutralize the threat.
There's a bill that will be introduced, if it hasn't already, campus carry. Your position on that?
My position is the same as my predecessor, and I think many chiefs, I know for sure, in this state, in the UW system, which is that we are certainly, and I am certainly, against the notion of introducing opportunities for more exposure, more guns on campus.
Okay. And there was a bill introduced just last week, Blue Lives Matter. It would make it a hate crime to target an officer. Support that? Good idea?
I would really want to know a little bit more about that in terms of what it seeks to, you know, obviously I think it seeks to deter and to impose a similar enhanced penalty for targeting any particular group. I initially, at first glance, I certainly would support any effort to, you know, to deter targeted attacks. I know that we've seen that increase and that, you know, ambush execution style attacks on officers have gone off the charts this year. So I would support absolutely any efforts to, you know, to put in place deterrence such as this. The reality is any penalty is a reaction, and in that sense the damage has already been done. Might it potentially prevent a future attack? Perhaps, but my initial sense is that those crimes are driven in the moment by a particular energy and attitude that I'm not convinced a hate crime penalty would necessarily mitigate entirely.
We're divided nation when you have the Electoral College going one way and the popular vote going another. And so here's my question. The issue is free speech. When prominent speakers from either left or right, it doesn't matter, when they appear on campus, on November 16th, Mr. Ben Shapiro, a conservative, spoke, and he was interrupted by protesters. What should be the rules on a university that's based on the free exchange of ideas? Your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are certainly, as one who has sworn to uphold the Constitution and the right to free speech and to assemble and to protest, my stance is that that is a role that we play to facilitate that process in a democracy. That's part of what we do, and that's what we're here for, regardless of the issue. So when it comes to a specific topic or a specific speaker and their agenda, our role is to remain objective and neutral and to facilitate that process. Now, when there are certain rules that apply depending on the venue, depending on the conduct, certainly if lines are crossed and parameters that have been established around expectations for either venue or conduct, then that's also a role that we play as police, which is to step in and do what we need to do to either enforce rules that have been broken or to redirect individuals to hopefully avoid that as the potential or as the outcome or the consequence.
In these free speech issues, is there a system-wide rules and regulations, or does it vary from campus to campus? Does the chancellor's office here set rules for these free speech issues, or does your department have the authority to pretty much draft your own response protocols?
Yeah, there isn't any one owner. I think this is one of those where we certainly are collaborating and having the conversations as we've seen an increase in some of this activity and more so an increase in some of the contentiousness around the assemblies and the protests that are taking place. So I, this department, representatives, myself and others from this department are in conversations ongoing with the campus administrators, with the chancellor's office, with the dean of students, with housing, with other affected, potentially affected groups, to include student organizers as well, to all come to the table and try to agree upon what those parameters are. So we do have the flexibility to some extent to set those guidelines, and by we I mean the collective. It's a partnership and a collaborative discussion with everybody's interests hopefully being
protected. So there's no system-wide top-down rule?
Okay. Not currently.
One of the big changes in your career is policing by video, body cameras, and those stopped, traffic stopped, and others, and witnesses. Is this a good trend, Chief?
I think this brings us back to that initial question about technology, and certainly with the advent of body-worn cameras for police.
Which all of your officers have, don't they?
They do, yes.
Excuse me.
And I'll say, coming from the Madison Police Department, that is not something that we had at the Madison Police Department. It's still a topic for discussion and yet to be determined. And I think one of the things I did there was a lot of research around the use of body-worn cameras. And so one thing that I understood very quickly is that with this new technology, it hit pretty quickly, and agencies across the country really, I think, jumped in some larger cities, jumped in with outfitting their officers with body-worn video before they had actually understood the potential impact of doing that. Impact on privacy concerns for the community members, and also impact on records release. Suddenly there was an increased request for open records and for all of the footage, which also ties into that privacy concern. So I think one of the things that's been really great here at the UW Police Department is that these cameras are relatively new in terms of just having outfitted the officers within the last year and a half or so with those cameras, and that was done not without having already studied and looked at some of those concerns that came to light from the early users of the technology. So currently, as it stands, I think that there are some remaining questions about privacy concerns that can get raised by individuals or groups as we're gaining footage out there. But overall, I think that if it is a technology that can increase community trust in police, if it increases transparency and accountability, then I think that's what the hope is for this technology, and that's certainly one of the things that we hope using them here promotes.
A question about national issues. The deaths of African Americans in police custody last year, there was a rash of them, involved male officers. Here's my question. Do female officers respond differently to some of these incidents than male officers, Chief?
I think that to sort of reduce that to a response based on gender would be disingenuous, because I think that certainly these choices are individual choices that officers make based on a really complex set of experiences, because people, I think, sometimes forget that we are human beings, and we all come with our lenses and our experiences and our points and frames of reference. And so you will not get a cookie-cutter response from officers. But what we try to do, obviously, in training is to create a range of what we feel are acceptable responses, both in terms of a police response, but that response is based on what the community is expecting from us. What do they need and want us to do? They expect us to respond to deadly threats and protect and preserve life. So if that's the expectation and that's the social contract, then we talk about what that looks like and what tools do we use to make that happen. So when it comes to this question of gender, it's an excellent question, because I will say that obviously as a female in this profession, my skills and my socialization is absolutely going to factor into my response. So if I do my own self-assessment and I am gauging my size and I'm gauging my strength, and I'm gauging my strength not just in terms of physical strength but communication skills, if that's a tool that I'm very comfortable using and is effective for me, then that's something that I will bring to bear, and my threshold will be slightly different than somebody else's who might be a little bit more comfortable using sort of their physical presence at an earlier time in the contact. So it's intriguing and it's fascinating, and I will say that I do think that women in this profession bringing that skill set with them, I hate stereotypes, so as you can tell, I'm trying to avoid going down the road of a stereotype, but certainly when I've watched my male counterparts in certain interactions, within this range of acceptable responses that we train for, I might spend a little bit more time talking to somebody before I decide to take it to that next level, because I have an understanding about what that might do for my own safety and for the safety of others if I decide to move to that physical realm, what I would consider for me prematurely.
But as a veteran dedicated officer, what was your response to the Freddie Gray videotapes and the others once you saw them?
Well, all of the videotapes, really. I think the challenge around those videotapes, and we talked about the body-worn cameras earlier, is they're disturbing. There is no visual use of force that I have ever seen, really, that I look at and think that looks good or that's easy to watch. Force is physical force is ugly, and there are some things that officers are forced to do in the course of their duties that just they don't look good on camera. That said, the incidents that we're talking about, some of these high-profile incidents, yes. absolutely disturbing visuals to see, and certainly the information that comes to light following those is really where the focus needs to be, and I think in many cases has been, to evaluate and assess the actions taken in that larger context, not just on what we see in the 30 seconds to 2 minutes. As an imperative part of the entire puzzle.
Yes.
But it's not the only part, and so my approach has always been following these or any incidences that we see a short video capture is to ask more questions, to find out more about what's going on there, and to place that footage within that larger context and then draw our conclusions around those and hold people accountable based on all of that.
Just a couple more questions. Welcome to a campus where the fall begins with Freak Fest and finals ends with Mifflin Street Block Party. Your reaction to both those annual events?
Should they both
be discontinued?
They've not. They've changed a lot over the years. So clearly, as a City of Madison officer, I worked alongside UWPD for many, many years at countless Halloween gatherings and Mifflin Streets. I will say, as a student, I did make my way down to State Street on Halloween before it was officially Freak Fest. I did not ever make my way to Mifflin Street Block Party, however. So my perspective on those events, on Mifflin for sure, is only from a policing perspective. But you know, I actually say on either side, as an officer, I enjoyed working those events. Actually, clearly, when there was a threshold of safety and the concerns around Halloween and Mifflin Street with the excess alcohol consumption and potential crowd mentality that we saw on State Street before we got a little bit of a hold of it, and Freak Fest is now the result of that. I enjoy those events and opportunities to get together as a larger community and have fun. But the key is, can we do that, and how do we do that, and stay safe around all of those events.
On November 8th, California and at least two other states joined Colorado in legalizing recreational marijuana. Is that a wise change that we're evolving to nationally?
Oh, I'm not here to judge one way or the other, whether that's a wise choice. I think that, alcohol and drugs, those are areas that in some ways, kind of keep police in business. And by that I mean, alcohol in particular is an issue that the abuse of alcohol really does, create a lot of the social ills that police are then called in to respond to. Marijuana is not one of those drugs whose use generates a lot of public attention or police attention from the standpoint of the behavior and the conduct that follows. But as it stands, marijuana is currently illegal, and so of course our role is to make sure that we're dissuading its use.
UW-Madison has a reputation for binge drinking. Is it deserved, and are we seeing less binge drinking by students on this campus?
I have not looked at the numbers. Been here long enough, only a week in, to be able to compare the trends or the numbers around binge drinking. I know certainly the rankings that come out annually about party schools have consistently put UW-Madison toward the top. I think, again, we're looking at a campus within a larger community and a larger state, and the questions that we need to be asking aren't just limited, I think, to what's going on campus, but what is the attitude around alcohol consumption in that larger context, because this university rests within that as well. So that would be my first
final question. You pioneered it when you were at MPD, a mental health component to policing. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about the dimension of mental health in the response of police officers to their incident calls?
Well, I learned a lot, but I think primarily one of the things that that has been impressed upon me the most throughout those experiences is really the shared concern around criminalizing mental illness. And my work really focused on how we as police, could unintentionally feed into that process, really with the best of intentions in getting people help, but using the criminal justice system to connect somebody with mental health treatment is not the way. And so I think for me it was really kind of focusing on what are the ways in which we can divert people from the criminal justice system, from jail, when their behavior is driven by a mental illness. And that's step one. But if we don't have options available and a place to take them or a place to divert them or help to connect them to, then sometimes officers doing the best they can are left with very few options, to keep somebody safe. And that's the trend that I think we saw for a while following deinstitutionalization, is that the jails became sort of the de facto way to connect individuals to treatment and to keep them safe. Fortunately, with the work that I think certainly we've done in the city and that I know this department is involved in, because we've worked with the Madison Police Department lockstep on a lot of these issues, fortunately that trend is shifting, and I think we're seeing more opportunities for officers to engage with people who are dealing with some sort of mental health crisis and redirect them and connect them, because we're more aware of and partnering with the community providers that can get them the help that they need.
UW-Madison Police Chief Kristen Roman, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.